Welcome to Wellness Wednesday on All Sides with Ann Fisher. Traumatic brain injuries contribute to nearly a third of all deaths in the United States. The effects can vary from mild headaches to severe mood swings and depression. Founder and executive director of the Resurrecting Lives Foundation and physical medicine and rehabilitation physician, Dr. Chris Ann Gordon, herself suffered a traumatic brain injury and knows firsthand about the struggles of recovery. She wrote about the experience in a new book titled Turn the Lights On, A Physician's Personal Journey from the Darkness of Traumatic Brain Injury to Hope, Healing, and Recovery. She joins us now. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much, and thank you so much for having me on this Wellness Wednesday.
What happened to you? How did the injury occur?
Well, it was very interesting. I was actually putting up Christmas decorations and forgot everything I ever learned about physics, trying to push some very heavy porcelain from a carpeted floor to a cement floor. And when it gave way, I literally hit a brick wall, literally hit the top of my head into a brick wall and realized that this was unlike any other injury I'd had.
It was like the crown of your head?
Right, the crown of my head. You know, I'm a big football fan. Uh-huh. You know, Jonathan Wells is actually helping me get the message out about traumatic brain injury. And I felt just like a football player hitting head to head, you know, and realized that I was going out. I was losing consciousness. And that was the beginning of this very long journey that somehow brought me from physician to patient and then back to physician with a very strong bent toward helping our veterans coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan with traumatic brain injuries.
Yeah, physicians usually don't make the greatest
patients.
Oh, I was
horrible.
Yeah, what was your... You weren't into this issue before this point.
Well, I loved traumatic brain injury. Dr. Jerry Mishu, the chairman of the physical medicine department at OSU, is a visionary, and he was my teacher when I was in the residency. So it was my subspecialty that I enjoyed the most. I never, for a moment, thought I would be a patient.
What did you learn by being a patient?
You know, that's very interesting because...
Maybe I should say experiencing the injury yourself.
Correct. The experience actually led me to understand that what I had read in textbooks is really good if you're outside looking in, but if you're in the inside of your brain trying to look out, none of it really helped me. It's one of the reasons why I wrote this book, quite frankly, and because my struggle to get out was very different from what I had learned would help us out.
What were your symptoms?
You know, my biggest symptom and actually sign was the fact that I lost all ability to speak. And for my colleagues who know me, and one of the ways that I think my situation was so much better than our young veterans is they realized if I wasn't speaking, there's a problem here, you know?
So you hit your head.
Yes.
And you immediately couldn't speak, or was it?
Within about 30 seconds, I would gauge, I lost consciousness.
Okay.
And I regained my consciousness the best I can figure 20 minutes later or so. And at that moment, I really couldn't speak. At that moment, for 4 or 5 minutes, I really couldn't move either. And
Were you alone?
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. Yeah. Alone in the basement underneath a stairwell. You know,
oh,
it
you
was
were getting
just,
the decorations
exactly,
out.
Exactly.
Now I'm visualizing.
Exactly.
That's exactly where. Yeah.
Yes, right.
So you were alone. What did you do?
Well, you know, I waited for a while thinking, you know, my sister was in town. I had some friends that may be stopping over. And
But you couldn't move?
I started being able to move in about 4 or 5 minutes. So, you know, again, I was very well trained by my colleagues at OSU. So I'm thinking, what if I have a cervical spine injury? I can move a little bit now, but if I get up, I may dislodge the spine. After hours, I said, okay, I'm going to have to get up and I'm going to have to move in order to get some help. And I do remember kind of crawling up the steps because I was unsteady. I didn't want to fall back down again. And this was a moment of clarity for me. I went over and grabbed my phone and stared at it. And all I could think of is this could help me, but I had no idea how. And then when I tried to speak, I couldn't do that either. And suddenly it was really interesting because dusk was coming in this dark November night. And I'm sitting there thinking, okay, that's really, you know, even in my cloudiness, I said, that's kind of a metaphor, which is what is going on right now. Exactly.
Wow.
But I do really, really thank all of my colleagues involved, including Dr. Mishu, because I had a normal MRI and a normal CT scan. And here I am, very impaired. I couldn't practice medicine. I couldn't drive. I couldn't do any of this stuff. And my studies are normal. So I was really, I consider that my boot camp for working with our young veterans coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan.
Not to assume just by the scans.
Exactly. And what I tell them is, you know, just because your scan is normal doesn't mean that your brain is normal. And we now have much better scans, diffusion tensor imaging and SPECT scans and functional MRIs to prove that. One of the biggest lessons that I learned, and one of the things that I really appreciate being able to get out to your audience today, is that our young heroes with traumatic brain injury, our athletes with, you know, multiple repetitive traumatic brain injuries, are out of their brains, not out of their minds. And because of that, I learned that we really need to change the rehabilitation strategy for these young, very healthy individuals who don't really need as much rehab of body as they do of brain.
And what's the difference?
There's several differences. The first thing is we've got to go from a pharmaceutical treatment, which is to kind of slow the brain down with antidepressants and antipsychotics. I mean, they're good for a short period of time, but we've got to go from a pharmaceutical to a digiceutical. And the digiceutical is using technology, particularly with this very young group of patients who are used to smartphones, who are used to computers, who are used to PlayStation 4s. And we're actually in the process of developing known protocols, known therapies, known things that help the brain regenerate and putting them in the digital world for our
vets. Give us an example of what you're talking about.
Okay, for example, one of the first things that happens when you have a brain injury, and it happened to me, was your vision is just really difficult.
You like can't, what? It's blurred?
Yes. You know, think of Van Gogh
three
pictures.
Three martinis.
I haven't had three martinis, but I have looked at Van Gogh. And I have to tell you that it auras around things. There's no clarity. You lose your depth perception. You lose your ability to kind of bring your pupils down, constrict your pupils to keep light out. So it is very much of a kind of hyper-awareness of your environment. So what we will be doing in our first leg of the therapy is to retrain the brain how to do those things, how to filter out light, how to be able to look and develop clarity by various different mechanisms similar to gaming, because we know that gaming helps retrain brains. We will have them go through various exercises multiple times a day. So we're going to change the way that this is delivered by having physicians and therapists oversee them, but have them get their therapy at home. And they can do that 15 minutes a day, multiple times. Okay.
What's the protocol now? I mean, what's typical now?
Right. What's typical now is...
Because a lot of these guys are working through VA.
Exactly. And at the VA, as in every major center, we have about an hour of therapy three times a week. Well, first of all, our young veterans can't get to the Chalmers, P. Wiley, VA, or the VA. They're 30, 50, 60 miles away. They don't have money for gas. They don't have transportation. And in some cases, they can't find their way there.
Okay. Because of the injury.
Exactly, because of the injury. So what we're going to do is have them, you know, head to the VA. There will be a series. We're actually working on this right now with the Chalmers, Wiley, to get a pilot program going, to be able to have the therapist look them over, show them how to use the smart digital, you know, rehab that we have, and then have them go home. And we're going to have it so that we can kind of keep track of what their therapy is and how well they're doing. And just like in video games, they'll advance from one level to the next with various rewards for the veteran and their family members. We're going to make this very family friendly so that, you know, eventually if they want to show the family what they're doing, either on their smartphone, their computer, the TV set, you know, if they have, for instance, many of our vets have young kids, they could benefit from some of this too. You know, we're really training their eyes how to read again, how to see again, how to envision the world again.
And is it fun?
It will be fun. I am not very digital. My young heroes have made me digital. I am not kidding you. And I'm very lucky to be working with the folks at Rev One here in Central Ohio, right down the street, actually, the kind of think tank, our own homegrown Shark Tank. And I will tell you that the young people there and the folks, my sponsors there, have really made me enjoy video gaming, which I never thought I would. But, you know, it does have a tendency to.
How did you recover? Because you obviously have returned your voice is back.
Yeah, my voice is back. back. I know. In fact, maybe I should slow it down. But, you know, it was very interesting because I wrote this book as a book of hope, primarily for our veterans, and as a manual for healthcare officials who are working with the veterans, because, you know, only 8 to 10% of the healthcare providers ever deal with TBI. So this kind of tells them a little bit about that. And as I was going through, I said, you know, this is how I rehabbed myself. I rehabbed myself on my Mac computer at home. You know, brain fatigue after TBI is such that you can only pay attention 15, 20 minutes at a time.
In fact, they discourage you from watching television or being on your computer.
Exactly. But if you can do it 15 to 20 minutes three times a day, you know, what you have to do is get the brain to lay down the tracks again, you know, lay down something that a switch then is kind of, you know, thrown on in your light. That's why it's very much like light. And then you can think again.
So what when you lay down those tracks, how do you start?
You know, you just repetition.
So you're what? I mean, you're learning the ABCs over again?
Correct.
Or what are you actually doing?
What I was doing, what we will be doing here is first teaching the vision and then teaching simple reading and then teaching reading across a page and faster and more content, you know, so that the brain gradually kind of gets the idea of what it's supposed to be doing. And one day when somebody will be doing this, they will have about a 5-minute journey from not being able to do it to, oh, there it is. It's there, and it will not retrieve. It will stay there with you, and then you move to the next level.
Okay.
It is just instantaneous recovery after weeks of therapy.
And that's because we know now that the brain has this plasticity, is the word that's been applied to
it.
We grew up, many of us, thinking this is, you have only so many brain cells, and once you lose them, they're gone forever.
Correct.
We know now that's absolutely not at all the way it is.
Exactly.
That we can retrain our brains, that it is malleable.
Right, exactly.
It's pretty amazing when you think about it. How did you get your voice back?
That was very interesting because it took about 6 weeks, okay? And it was through the treatment that Dr. Mishu had prescribed, some amantadine. That's the drug in Awakening, okay?
All right.
And it literally, I will tell you.
The movie Awakening.
Right, exactly. That movie. And anybody who has a TBI, get that movie because it is really
very true.
Robin
Williams movie.
Exactly. It was wonderful. I could not speak. And then suddenly, like about 4 hours after I took this, I get this feeling like something was about to happen. And I sat down and I read, like, you know, see, spot, run. There was a whole sentence and it came out. Now, what happened is as the medication wore off, that ability decreased until the next dose. And I talk about that in my book that, you know, at one point in time, about 3 days into this therapy, I think I would have given anything I had to keep this medication steady, you know, in my brain. And eventually I was able to wean off it. You know, one of the things we learn at Ohio State and in all rehab facilities like Ohio Health is that you pay very close attention to somebody with a TBI. You give them small doses of medication and monitor it frequently.
So Resurrecting Lives Foundation, that is the foundation you've established to help the returning soldiers, you know,
warriors, right?
Warriors, yeah.
Right.
What does it do?
Well, what we first started out to do is to start awareness about this being an issue. You know, the signature wound of these wars or conflicts is mild traumatic brain injury. We didn't know much about it. Nobody was talking about it. We, you know, start out to get that conversation going. We need to reconnect the Department of Defense, the Veterans Administration, and the civilian population. Our civilian healthcare system has 99% of the resources. Quit making them separate, bring them together. So we started that awareness campaign because you can't attack a problem until you admit there is a problem. We're just now seeing, you know, admission on the part of the NFL through many of our warriors like Jonathan Wells, an NFL player as well as an OSU player, who are speaking up and saying, no, we have these issues. So that's our awareness campaign. We also work with our legislators nationally in order to get national legislation passed to assist our veterans coming back. It's not fair to have somebody in a military base serve our nation for 4 or 5 years and one day say, okay, goodbye. You know, we're done. You know, you go find your own job, find your own place to live. You know, here's a handful of cash and a handful of pills and have at it. So we set out to change that. And then from increasing that awareness, then we were able to jump to our next stage, which is actually delivering treatment for the problem that now the nation realizes we are aware. We have 17,000 young men and women in Ohio with this.
We will have a link to Resurrecting Lives Foundation on our website at WOSU.org if you want to learn more about it. Dr. Chris Ann Gordon, thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
Oh, thank you so much. Take care now.
Dr. Chris Ann Gordon is the founder and executive director of the Resurrecting Lives Foundation. She's also a physician and physical medicine and rehabilitation physician. Her new book is entitled Turn the Lights On, A Physician's Personal Journey from the Darkness of Traumatic Brain Injury to Hope, Healing, and Recovery. More Wellness Wednesdays coming up on All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to Wellness Wednesday on All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. When it comes to health, cooking matters. The Columbus nonprofit Local Matters knows that not everyone understands or has been taught how to cook healthy food. To address that issue, Local Matters has scheduled community kitchen classes throughout the month of March. For more information on how to register, go to the link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Joining us now is Executive Director of Local Matters, Michelle Moskowitz-Brown. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Ann.
What does cooking have to do with health?
It has a lot to do with health. And Local Matters was founded, we're going on our 10th anniversary this spring, and we were founded around the notion that children might have a shorter lifespan than their parents due to diet-related diseases. And so we immediately looked at, you know, how can we affect what kids are eating, how they're growing up, and kind of hit this issue early on. And so cooking has a lot of great health benefits. Clearly, when you're, you know, eating essentially a wide variety of whole foods and fruits and vegetables, we all know, you know, within our own bodies, like, that makes you feel good. And also that, you know, particularly with people with diabetes and specific other chronic diet-related diseases, that you can see pretty significant results from cooking and eating at home over a pretty short time frame. So there are a lot of great benefits that you can see quickly.
I would imagine that the idea of processed foods is raised in this conversation. Mm-hmm.
Sure. Yeah. I mean,
Of people just go to the helper box, whether it's hamburger or whatever it might be.
Right. And I think the convenience food that came up through sort of the 70s, I grew up on that food. Mm-hmm. I mean, I say, like, if I can eat well, anybody can, because I didn't eat a vegetable till I was a teenager, basically. But those are convenient ways to eat. And I think that they've had their place in our world. And I think the more we can make things easy for people in general, you know, you can still have convenient, you know, maybe frozen vegetables are going to be really healthy and quick to get on the table. But maybe you want to avoid, you know, boxes with 20 ingredients, that kind of thing.
And sauces and all that kind of stuff in them. Who are you shooting for with this program at Local Matters? Who is your target audience?
That's what I love about the work, is that we work with everyone from preschoolers to seniors. We work with people in recovery, people who are experiencing diabetes, and, you know, kids at rec centers and their parents.
Like, there's different classes for all
these? Yeah. So we teach at about 80 different locations.
Wow.
In addition to our kitchen, which just opened 2 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And generally, our mission is focused on lower income individuals. But I would say that we do that even though these issues do not really discriminate according to socioeconomic status. It's
right.
Just that some people can afford to take our classes and some people can't.
Right. Cooking on a budget can be a challenge for a lot of people. For a lot of people, they don't even have the equipment to begin with.
Sure. And we like to help people get set up with really basics. I mean, we start with, let's say, knife skills, so that once you've got, you know, if you've got a reasonable knife, we have this sort of $10 knife, and we often try to get those supplies for our participants as well. And, you know, a basic cutting board. We can also help people figure out how to do, you know, non-heat cooking. We do have some, you know, people who participate in our programs that might be shutting off their gas in the summertime to save some money. So we're pretty adaptive with the way that we teach cooking so that it's accessible for everybody, sort of regardless of what's in your kitchen and regardless of whether you have years of experience.
What kind of challenges are you finding older people having?
A lot of times older people will be challenged by cooking for themselves, right? So it's just one person in the household. You don't want to overcook. We're actually working with doctors now. Today, after I leave here today, I'll be going to Mount Carmel's Healthy Living Center to work with internal medicine on topics specifically for a geriatric population. So we do find that, you know, if you're already, you know, you're senior, you may already have a chronic disease. And so, but you're, you know, you basically don't want to make a whole big batch of food that you're not going to eat. So I think preservation is an issue. Sometimes skill, sometimes endurance. You know, my mom is a good example of like she can be pretty low energy from time to time. And So, you know, how do you make it easy that she makes, you know, one meal and she's got it for the week, essentially. So we try to make those things simple and understand what some sort of physical barriers might be to the work.
You're listening to Wellness Wednesday on All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about the importance of cooking and health. My guest is Michelle Moskowitz-Brown. She's Executive Director of Local Matters. That's a local organization. It's dedicated to bringing healthful food to plates where it's needed. They are, through the month of March, hosting many cooking classes of all different kinds. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Tell us about what the community kitchen cooking classes are like.
Sure. So we opened that space about 2 years ago, and we have weekly classes, and it's a really good representative crowd. You have, you know, six-year-olds, you have mom, grandma, you're going to have people who've participated in our classes and other settings coming in for sort of continuing education. You have students on date night, and it's really people who are transitioning out of homelessness. So all in one room, and I think that's really what differentiates this space from any other in our city, that you know, we sort of use food as this way of connecting, but really you're bonding with other community members, and it's that place that's not your home and it's not work. But it's a place, a safe place you can come to learn how to cook, to eat a good meal, and then, you know, you're going home well fed and happy for the week.
Who teaches the classes?
So we have about 10 food educators. Our team takes turns teaching the classes. So you've got people who've been doing this work for as long as we've existed. Sometimes it'll be a trained chef, but it's also people who are just experienced, you know, cooks who've been doing this for a long time. So again, making it approachable.
And what kind of meals are we talking about?
So let's see. We have our class schedule going for the April to June sessions. And you're going to make, you might have like a Taco Tuesday class. You're going to have a, you know, instead of going to the drive-thru, here's a quick way to make a meal. Some fun topics are cook once, eat twice, totally tofu, excellent breakfast recipes, kale, yeah, good fun stuff.
Local Matters also focuses on the importance of nutrition, right?
Yes.
And that's in all of your classes.
Exactly. And I think the key here is that we try to make this about the food. So nutrition can be about the sum of its parts. You might be thinking about how many fruits and vegetables I should eat or what are the nutrients. And we just like to say we want to make food a positive experience, you know, regardless of your past history, so that you can get good nutrition without maybe overthinking it.
Well, that's an interesting thing. The past history, a lot of people didn't grow up cooking. They never learned. What surprises you about the people showing up at these classes?
I think we're starting to see that people are reconnecting with cooking, and even with the little kids.
Okay.
You know, where we say, you know, they don't know where, you know, potatoes grow, or they think ketchup, you know, is, you know, food's growing in the grocery store. But we're starting to see that kids are trying more fruits and vegetables. So that surprises me in a good way, that we're starting to see the trends reverse. I think there's a lot of confusion about, you know, I have to eat you know, a certain way, or there's fad diets. So I'm usually surprised. Well, not really surprised, but I notice that there's a lot of confusion about that.
You have gardens too, right?
We do. So we usually couple those wherever we can have our curricula. So let's say our biggest partner on that is the Rex and Park Centers.
Uh-huh.
We have about 10 different gardens. And during the summer, we have an 8-week curricula that takes place. So kids can actually grow the food, taste the food right from the garden. And that is an unremarkable experience.
Tell us about the kitchen, too. This is only a couple years old, right?
Right. So it's meant to be a very accessible residential-looking space. So there's no fancy equipment. So when you come in, you should feel like, aside from stainless steel tables, that you're more or less cooking something that you could cook at home. And it's a space on the south side. We're across from Children's Hospital.
Okay.
So in that space, our goal was to offer these free and sliding scale classes to everyone in the community, to use it as a space to train people to deliver our programs. We do some programming outside of Columbus. So let's say we're working with Grady Memorial in Delaware. We bring those folks down to train in our kitchen, and then they go back and deliver the classes in their community.
Okay.
And then we also use a space to work with doctors. So we're using a curricula out of Tulane Medical School. It's a culinary medicine curricula that gives doctors the skills, and all healthcare providers, skills they're not getting in medical school. So you're supposed to get 20-some hours of nutrition.
What?
So literally incremental changes. So let's say a patient comes, you know, you're talking with your patient and they are, let's say, going to the drive-thru every day, and you say, well, hey, instead of getting that sub, maybe you could just try a peanut butter sandwich for tomorrow. Just like take some whole wheat bread and put some peanut butter on it. So really giving doctors those tools so that they've experienced, they know how to cook because they're some of the worst perpetrators in that. They'll admit it themselves. So we're helping them get those skills. And then once they have it, they're able to come to classes as well, because we know that doctors are big influencers.
Uh-huh.
So we want to help them have those skill sets and then also refer patients essentially to our program. So that's the end goal with all of that work.
What have you learned from the students of these classes?
In overall?
Yeah. How have they helped develop the program or evolve it or change it?
Yeah, I mean, they make a lot of recommendations. So, you know, in terms of what we're offering, we're basically going to say if someone wants to, you know, learn more about making meals for their kids or snacks, we're very responsive to that. So we take surveys at every class and essentially plan the next schedule based on what we're hearing.
Oh, okay. All right. And what about the more the new community, the new Americans community, immigrants here from other countries? There are places that they can go to shop that where they'll find familiar ingredients, but those are not everywhere. I mean, are you seeing interest from that community?
We are. And generally, because we work in so many different neighborhoods aside from the kitchen, mm-hmm. what we find is that every neighborhood has a different need. So with new Americans, a lot of times they want to grow more food.
Okay.
So we'll help them access land to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I would say at our Southside kitchen, we're not seeing as many new Americans. We're seeing residents from, you know, a pretty small radius, as well as maybe some folks coming from around the city. But essentially, all of the cooking we do, we have some African diaspora cooking classes coming up. We basically like to say, like, whatever it is, you know, that's in your culture or tradition, you're going to be able to cook that food, maybe cook it slightly healthier, and you'll be able to do that with us. So we're very responsive in terms of how we plan our classes.
And is anyone invited to those courses as well, not just new Americans? I mean,
absolutely.
If somebody wants to learn to cook African cuisine?
Exactly. That's the cool part about it, is that this is a really mixed classroom in terms of socioeconomic status, background, gender, age. So I think that's really the exciting part, is that you're going to hear from somebody who might have some experience with this kind of cooking, and then you'll have people who just would never have encountered this type of cooking or interacted with the people in the room in another setting.
How do you pay for these? Do you charge people or what?
Yeah, so the classes have a sliding scale, so you can come for $0, and we don't screen for that. When we set up the space, we made sure that we had enough money to at least offer that for 2 years going. And so now that we're in 2 years in, we're just going to raise more private funds, essentially, to make sure that's possible. But paying customers do help subsidize that cost. So let's say market rate is $25, which is still the best deal in town for any cooking class. You can pay $25, or you can pay $50 to pay it forward to help us keep the classes going.
Okay, so... and then when people say they can't afford anything, there's no question.
Correct.
They're not challenged on that. Well, Michelle Moskowitz-Brown, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
Michelle Moskowitz-Brown is the executive director of Local Matters. We've been talking about their scheduled community kitchen classes throughout the month of March and around the city. For more information, check out the link at our website at WOSU.org/allsides. There's more Wellness Wednesday coming up on All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to Wellness Wednesday on All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. There is a new old place to shop for fresh produce in Columbus. The All People's Fresh Market reopens this week with the goal of supplying fresh produce to households that earn up to 200% of the federal poverty level. The market supplies the produce for free, and there's a focus on convenience. Joining us now is Executive Director of Community Development for All People, Reverend John Edgar. Welcome back to the show.
And it's delightful to be back with you again today.
The new location's a little bigger than All People's First Market location. Tell us about what's new about this.
Sure. We've been operating a fresh market for fruits and vegetables for about 5 years now. And starting tomorrow, we do the grand opening of it, moving directly across the street into what was before a drive-through beer and wine store. And so part of it is just a delightful repurposing of a property that was, quite frankly, a negative influence in our community. It went dark in January of 2017. And so we've been able to acquire the property, and we have now finished these renovations. It's amazing how well a drive-through liquor store can be adapted to a fresh market.
Well, there's a lot of refrigeration.
There you go.
Right?
That's the essence
right off the
of
bat.
It. Right.
And the drive-through aspect of it, this is really a nice convenience for people who have kids in tow.
Right.
Maybe they're older.
Yeah. So in general, though, while the front and back door will go up, it's more to create a plaza impact. And so in general, people
it's
will walk
really
in.
It's not really drive-through.
That's right.
Okay.
People will walk in, and the entire inventory focuses on fruits and vegetables. So it's not a traditional food pantry, though there's a place for that, of course. And most of this food does come from the Middle Ohio Food Bank. But the idea is to make it attractive and easy for people to eat healthier by having access to healthy food. Fruits and vegetables.
And one of the big issues is the hours.
Right.
A lot of places have restricted hours, and a lot of people who are low income are very restricted in their time.
Right. And so this store is now open 5 days a week, including on Saturdays. And we did our soft opening last week to make sure we had the kinks worked out. And it's amazing how many people have been coming and going. The other change is to try to evolve the style of how people acquire fresh fruits and vegetables, because previously our market was only open on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, so people would come and try to take enough produce for an entire week, but sometimes it spoils, it gets lost in the back of the refrigerator. And in this new venture, our hope is to encourage people to come multiple times each week. And for folks who receive SNAP benefits, the concept is come shop with us first, It's all free. Get fruits and vegetables and then go to Kroger, Giant Eagle, and finish your food shopping and acquire the things that you can't get for free in a fresh market.
What kind of help do you have there for people who aren't sure what to buy?
Yeah. We do a variety of things to help people understand how tasty, not only healthy, the food can be. And so we do cooking demonstrations. We do have Local Matters and Cooking Matters provide some of our classes. Mm-hmm. A group called Sprouting Spoons also does instructional experiences. And we try to get people to taste things they haven't tasted before and then to realize I can take this home and use it for my family. We also, across the street in our main facility, have a demonstration kitchen, and lots of the folks who shop in the market participate in those classes.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. It's Wellness Wednesday, and we're talking about a new old food store. It's been around for about 5 years. It's been moved to a new location. It's called the All People's Fresh Market. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. My guest is Reverend John Edgar. He's Executive Director of Community Development for All People. Where did this whole idea come from in the first place? Why not just your standard food pantry?
At the core of our work at Community Development for All People, we're committed to the notion that we want people to be practitioners of their own health and wellness, that we believe that everybody actually has a core aspirational desire to be healthy. It just is for low-income folks, there are often many barriers to achieving that. And so one of the things we wanted to do was to make it so much easier to be healthy by eating healthy and to provide fruits and vegetables at no cost. Because quite frankly, it is not only sometimes a matter of convenience or access in terms of transportation, but it's expensive to buy fresh fruits and vegetables. And this initiative attempts to overcome those challenges and to create a community that focuses on health and wellness, where everybody is a practitioner of wellness for themselves, their family, and ultimately for the whole community.
What's the variety like?
Yeah. There's a rich variety of things that come into our market. Again, most of it comes through Mid-Ohio Food Bank, and we give thanks to their leadership, Matt Hobbish and others, for their creativity in bringing large supplies of fresh produce into Central Ohio. But it's everything from the standard things you think about of apples and oranges and cucumbers, but we have varieties of squash and other things that nobody's ever seen before. And so part of it is just the fun of seeing what's in the market on any given day. And that's part of why we encourage people to come multiple times a week, because there'll be something different there every day.
Mm-hmm. And how many people are you serving at this point?
Right.
What do you expect, and what are your expectations?
Sure. In the past year, 2017, in our previous location across the street, we were able to serve around 300 to 400 families each week.
Okay.
We are anticipating and already seeing that it's true that that volume will certainly double, if not more than that. And so we'll be serving many more folks, and people will be coming multiple times in a week. The other thing I would mention is that it's all designed to also function as what's sometimes referred to as the third place. This notion that the first place in our lives is where we live, the second place is where we go to work or go to school, but the third places in our lives are where we hang out when we're not at home and we're not at work. And in a diverse community like the part of the South Side where we're located, it really matters to create third places that bring people together in the midst of their diversity to create unity. And because eating healthy and food are such universal desires in everybody's lives, we see this as a chance to create a third place that brings people who are black and white, young and old, gay and straight. Everybody comes together on the avenue. And to assists with that, we not only have acquired the drive-through that's now the Fresh Market, but we also now control all of the land around it. So it's going to be transformed this spring into a plaza. So there'll be food trucks and farmers markets. We'll do outdoor exercise classes. There'll be places to just sit and relax. It's all about creating an ethos, a community that centers on this notion that we are practitioners of health.
Not something that this community has had a lot of luck with in the last couple decades.
Yeah, things are definitely changing on the South Side. Our organization is also now a large-scale developer of affordable housing.
Yeah.
And so a lot of the blight is gone, the vacant, dilapidated properties. We're seeing a neighborhood that's coming back to life. But we also very much want to sustain this as a mixed-income community where nobody is forced to leave. And so we want activities in the community that address the range of people who are there and bring that diversity together. And we think this market is a linchpin in all that. It's also located immediately adjacent to the post office. So there's all kinds of foot traffic and activity. The South Side is a wonderful place to live because it's so diverse.
It has changed a lot, though, in the last few years.
It has, indeed. Yeah.
It's really interesting. How do people know what they can take and what they can't, and how does that work? How does the process work for people
Sure.
who visit there for the first time?
Right. When people come the very first time, they do register. It's, in that sense, it's a membership. And they fill in online some questions called Pantry Track from Mid-Ohio Food Bank. But after that, everybody's giving a little loyalty card, like the one that's in my pocket here, and you just swipe it.
Oh, it's like a little fob.
Yeah, it is a little fob thing. In fact, you could even cross-register with your Kroger card or your Giant Eagle card. And so when you come in, you are given a basket, and you can fill the basket with whatever you
want
to take.
Whatever you want. Okay.
And then you check out, swipe your card, and you can come back multiple times in the week. So there's a lot of latitude for people to make their own decisions. It's not telling people that you have to take this and you can't have that. It's encouraging people to expand their palates, to try different things, and to eat healthy each day.
What does it look like?
Yeah, it is really funky. You should come because tomorrow is the grand opening. The mayor will be there at 10:30 to cut the ribbon along with Matt Hobbish from Mid-Ohio. There are people from Molina CareSource and CareSource and different groups that are helping. But when you walk in the store, it's funky and it's different. The whole south wall is the coolers and from the beer store. But then this was a really rough building. So we have redesigned it in a way to make it attractive. So it has a brand new ceiling that is made out of slates from the skids that the food comes on. So we disassembled the skids and created this wood ceiling with all these different patterns in it. And it has an old concrete floor, but it has on it all these different kinds of bays and stands, and trays for food, like you'd see in the Fresh Market section of a large Kroger or Giant Eagle. And then there is a smoothie bar because we're really trying to get people to understand there's a place for ugly fruit in your life and mine.
Uh-huh.
So things may not always be without a blemish, but you can cut the blemish out, drop it in the blender, and then all of a sudden, you can have something nutritious to drink that day. There will be some classes and instruction. Molina, which is one of the managed care groups, has some of their staff present to give counseling and encouragement to people who are looking for additional assistance in their lives.
Give people a sense about it. This is open to anyone earning up to 200% of the federal poverty level. What is that now?
Right. For a family of four, that's over $40,000. So it's a pretty broad span. Also, later this spring and summer, in a partnership with Mid-Ohio, we will be receiving some produce that comes to them without any restrictions, and we'll be able to distribute it to anybody that comes into the community. So it won't be just the food trucks or the farmers markets. Some of the produce by the end of May will be available to anyone who wants to shop and then pay for it.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. So at all income levels.
That's right. At that point, it will expand.
I'm just trying to figure out that 200% of the federal poverty level, what does that even mean? It's a statistic that we bandy about, the poverty level and that kind of thing. But for a family of four, over $40,000, there might be some people out there who go, well, that's a decent amount of money. Right. But there's more to it than that, right?
Well, there is when you consider that if a family has young children and daycare expenses and others, right now there's an understanding in this community that people have to earn $22 an hour, which comes out to be about $44,000 in an annual salary, to be able to cover the basic expenses.
A living wage.
A living wage. And so the idea of setting food stamps or SNAP benefits and other benefits at 200% of the poverty level is saying that until a family gets to that level, they're going to not be able to handle all of the basic essentials, what are often referred to as the social determinants of health, to be able to thrive. So it's a way of assisting a family as families move forward. In our community, we have lots of people who are below the poverty level and yet work. And so this helps cover that gap.
They're talking about work requirements for Medicaid, for food stamps, that kind of a thing. What about that?
I think the primary issue is to make certain that people have access to the things that will help them thrive in their lives. We also run a free store, and we have lots of people that come and fulfill their work requirements in one or more of our programs. We welcome volunteers for the community at the Fresh Market. I think the issue, however, is to realize that most people really want to take care of themselves and their families. People do want to go to work at a living wage. And so instead of being punitive, it's just about how do we open up opportunity.
You said you did a soft opening about a week ago to get some of the kinks
right out.
What were some of the kinks?
Oh, part of it was people understanding that they could come multiple times a week, and so they didn't have to try to carry everything that they possibly could
and
take with them.
Explaining that, no, you
yeah
don't need that many
right
tomatoes because yeah you can come back whenever
right
you want.
And being open for us about four times as many hours. We're just working out some of our staffing things. The other thing I wanted to mention in the time is that our grand opening tomorrow in ribbon cutting is also a chance for us to announce an initiative we're calling Forward Together, where we're going to raise $1 million to pay for the property we acquired and to also expand our programming. And so we have early commitments of about $300,000 to that. And if I can fit it in,
sure,
one of the things that's going on right now with the help of the Columbus Foundation is they have a new crowdsourcing platform called Better Together.
Yeah.
And so right now, if you go to their website, you know, our All People's Fresh Market pops up, and you can make a contribution there. And so this week, we're raising $14,000 through there just to help cover some of the basic remodeling in the market. So lots of different ways to be involved. We encourage people to come out, sample the food, and then consider what it means to be part of a third place where everybody in our community comes together around what is maybe the most universal aspiration that we would be healthy and eat healthy.
We'll have the links to Columbus Foundation, to Community Development for All People on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. How are you going about raising the money?
It's an ongoing challenge for nonprofits, but for us, it breaks into several categories. We have some people who have been our supporters for a long time. Some of these individuals who grew up working class in the community and have done well in life. Jim Grody, Don Kelly, sometimes referred to as the Southside Champions. And
mm-hmm.
and those folks are being real helpful with us in this initiative as well. But that alone wouldn't get it done. To be able to raise this $1 million, it's about people throughout the community, including some of those who come and shop and volunteer. Everybody
mm-hmm.
wants to give forward when they're provided the opportunity. So we're excited about what we can do over these next months to be able to continue to build out the programming as we have acquired these new facilities.
What inspired you to go in this direction?
The organization I lead believes very much in what's called asset-based community development. The idea is to not focus on what are the needs or deficiencies in a neighborhood. Instead, the question is, what are people's dreams? What are they hoping for? And then how do we start with the resources that are immediately available to us, even if we start very small? And then by taking what people have and putting it to good use, we discover that other resources are drawn to that. And again, for us, there's nothing more foundational that the people want to be healthy. So it's about how do we rally together and get it done. So we can take a shuttered drive-through liquor store. We can take the skids that are discarded. We can remodel it. We can create a new ceiling. We can bring people in who shop and then volunteer. And together, in our language, because we're faith-based, we can build a front porch of the kingdom of God on the south side of Columbus, Ohio.
Well, Reverend John Edgar, thanks for joining us to talk about it today.
Yeah, thank you. It's a delight to be with you.
Reverend John Edgar is Executive Director of Community Development for All People. The All People's Fresh Market reopens this week officially with the grand opening, with the goal of supplying fresh produce to households that earn up to 200% of the federal poverty level. But in the long run, it'll be open to everybody, who even those people who are able to pay. Thanks for listening today. This has been Wellness Wednesday on All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.